Hello there and welcome to Full Chat with me, David Prutton.
And me, Ewan Thomas, celebrating all things we love about being on two wheels. Full Chat is powered by Bikesure. As the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, Bikesure will tailor a quote to your exact needs, saving you money on your annual bike, scooter or moped insurance.
Don't forget to press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or you can press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from.
Right, I'm looking forward to this one. Today's guest is a star of stage and screen, and I can't believe this. His career has spanned 50 years and counting, best known perhaps for starring roles in Red Dwarf and Death in Paradise. But for us, he's here because he's a massive bike nut. This guy is Mr. Motorbike. It is, of course, the one and only Danny John Jules.
If only, mate. I could go fast.
Well, don't worry, we can't go fast, but we love talking about it.
Oh yeah,
Danny, thank you so much for joining us on Full Chat. We're going to get to motorbikes in due course, but as a performer, mate, as you say in Ewan's introduction, stage, screen, and everything in between, where did that start for you? Were you a born show off?
It's quite difficult not to be in Ladbroke Grove. It's sort of it's like if you're not a show off, you're a weirdo, you know that one. I want to be part of the gang. I was a soul boy, you know. Everything I did, it was always I was a soul boy. Everyone else was reggae, but we loved the reggae. But you know, we were always the it's that lot, you know. Plastic sandals and baggy trousers.
Yeah, but it's all very well, Danny, saying being a show off or want to be centre of attention. But let's be honest, you've got talent there, mate. I mean, you've starred in some amazing TV programs on stage as well. I mean, Red Dwarf, for example, and Death in Paradise, they're huge shows. How did that ever come about, like Red Dwarf? Because, you know, you playing Cat, it must have changed your life overnight. It must have been, because it was such an iconic show.
Funny enough, I was actually in a West End show when I auditioned for Red Dwarf. And I mean, everything really, it was wrong about that timing of, you know, going to that. It was like I was destined never to get the job, but it was always mine. It's a weird one. So I was already in a show. The chances of you being able to, film a TV show while you're doing a West End show, 8 shows a week, was pretty remote. Two, I got there half hour late for the audition. And three, it was like, you know, when you walk in thinking, oh, all right. But the fact was, I didn't know that I was half hour late. That was the only saving grace. So I walked in, of course, didn't apologise to anyone. The BBC execs and the producers, directors, everyone sitting there. I walked in and went, all right, guys, how are you doing? I had no idea I was late. So roll on. I did the first ever scene I did in the show is what I did at the audition, and it just had a guy in a flash suit. So I found my dad's old wedding suit and wore that. So it was like a zoot suit, you know, baggy trousers, long jacket, you know, those with the chains. So I went in with that on, and sort of walked in, did my scene, and the producer came over and went, "Thanks, Dan." Started leading me. I said, "I just got here," and he went, "You're half an hour late, mate."
Huh?
No. Anyway, so further down the line, they said basically, you know, as soon as you walked in and didn't say anything about being late, it said that was the cat. And the suit, you know, that was the cat. And then, and he said, well, as you walked out, we knew that we were going to use you. The only thing was we had to sit there for 2 days and interview everyone we'd booked. So, you know, but that's showbiz. I've been to auditions where that would have been the case, where I was one of the guys that didn't know that I was never going to get the job. Mm. But that's just it. I mean, I'm sure you and in your time in the business, you know, talk about drop like a hot stone. You know, that's the game. You know, it's a game of no, it's a game of maybe, it's a game of you're in the top three, you know, it's out of you and someone else. It's always a competition, and 9 times out of 10, they're people you know. But, you know, I was lucky enough to have been in a scenario where, you know, what I put in myself is what I get out. And I think that's why I kind of have an affinity with bikers. It's a lonely existence. You know, yes, there's tons of crowds and accolades and all that, but, you know, it's not just getting on the bike. You know, like I watched that thing about Marquez and the gym work that he had to do to come, you know, that's lonely stuff. You know, it's getting in the I used to go swimming every morning, you know, because the impact, the impact stuff's great, but, you know, you need that sort of like floating, working the muscles without any impact. So I used to do both of that. So it all takes time. And, you know, all your mates are in the pub and you're looking over lines, you know, cider lines.
And obviously, when you get the call to go and film Death in Paradise on a beautiful sun-drenched island, I'm sure that's a very straight answer to that question. Anyway, the next question is motorcycling, motorbikes, biking in general. Where does that start for you?
Well, you just said it, Death in Paradise, you know, the bike and sidecar. See, it doesn't yes, matter. See, you said it already. So you can imagine, right? Now, the story of the bike in Death in Paradise was, when I read the script, we went to the first script reading, and I was reading the script, and it said, Dwayne turns up on a Harley Davidson and sidecar to the police station. So I went, ooh, what? Anyway, we read the first episode, so I went to the producers afterwards. I said, just a quick one. I said, you see the police station, right? It's a wooden shack, innit? Yeah, what cost about $5,000 to build? Yeah, and you're saying like you're gonna have a $120,000 Harley outside. How did he buy that? You know, and then they start scratching their heads. Well, yeah, because you know that obviously that sidecar that probably have to be bespoke made, and all that. By the time you put the frills on that thing, it's gonna be about $120,000. So you said it costs more than the police station. In fact, it costs more than the whole village, you know. So they all start scratching their head now. So I goes, oh, no, a guy could do that for you, a proper one. You see, what you need is something like left over from the war. You ain't going to have no fancy bike like that in there, are you? Oh, yeah, actually. Well, yeah, no, guy, it's Steve Keys, he'd build one. He's got one in back, yeah. So anyway, of course, he ain't got no bike at all, has he? So he's gone and built one.
And he's
shipped it over. The one that's my bike.
No way.
Yeah, the Bonnie. The first, remember the green one?
Yeah. That's mine. It looks the absolute business.
That's my bike.
It's funny you mentioned Steve, because it's thanks to Steve we got you on it. You know, we had Steve on last series and he spoke highly of you.
Steve,
yeah.
Oh, God, Steve is the one that kind of sort of, you know, that I met, who was the real biking sort of, family and all of that, you know. So that's how I really got to know most of the stuff, you know, because you had someone like Steve around all the time. So the first thing was, Steve, we need a bike, mate. You can't go out there in a Harley. So bomb, the next thing you know, they're shipping this thing over to the Caribbean to film. But don't forget, in the script, it was only ever in the first episode.
Yeah.
So they were going to do all that for one episode. I thought, this is bonkers. And then, of course, it's over there now. First day on the set. Never worked with bikers on telly. The director's an Irish biker, right? So, of course, this thing comes off the... Like, he looks at it, great. Gets on it, right? And, you know, everyone, you forget that there's a sidecar. Yeah? He's been riding a GS. Yeah, the furthest out he's gone is the panniers, isn't it? You got another 2 foot when you got a sidecar. What does he do?
No way.
In the square, lamppost, bam. Oh. So the first thing is all of the bike, it's all out of sync, because, you know, not everyone can hook up a sidecar. You got to get somebody who knows what they're doing. So, of course, all of that intricate setup with the sidecar has all gone to pot. So the first scenes I filmed on that, I'm steering that way, the bike's steering that way. So I'm doing a double steer to stay straight. So I'm literally doing this to keep this thing straight. So, you know, that's what bikes and filming, you know.
That's show business. Danny, if we can, let's rewind the clock even further than that. We know how passionate you are about bikes. Everybody knows it. It's well documented. But what was it like when, because talking from my experience, when I first passed my test, I got the words, congratulations, you've passed. I was like, yes, a bit of freedom. I can go where I want. I can get a bigger bike. What was that like when you first got your bike license? Was it instant love? Were you in love straight away with biking?
It's the way that I got it. Again, I'm in Derby at the Playhouse Theatre doing this same show that I told you about with the girl with the bad leg. Yeah. So we're in rehearsals and, you know, you get to that point where the photographer comes to start doing all the photos for the out the front and that. So anyway, we're there. This Thundercat turns up, geezer, black leathers, rucksack on the back. Jumps off. I went, geez, all the girls stopped eating lunch like that. Yeah. So we're looking now and saying, who's that? It's the photographer. I went, God, that looks cool. Mate, I went straight down the high street and booked me direct access.
Nice.
Before I left that show, I had my bike license. The geezer that was teaching me was on a fire blade. Nice. I was like, what? I'd look in the mirror and he'd be like that. And I'm on this little and what if I made a mistake, right? He'd ride up past me and just slap the back of the helmet. Pow! On the blade, right? And it, won't do that again. And then he'd take me home like on the back of the blade, and first thing he'd do is a wee. Only up north. Derby.
I love the fact that you think Derby's up north, Danny. I'm a bit further north than that in Yorkshire.
Yeah. It's north. Hey, it's north to southerners.
I even got my first bike up north. Yeah, yeah. It was. It's just a different level up there, isn't it? The bikers.
And just instantly, it sounds like instantly straight into it, where you have that seminal moment, which it just clicks. Mine was similar on those lines. I've seen someone get off this beautiful kind of chopper,
in
California. Like, what? Well, that's wow. As a kid, you kind of like. I want to do what he's
doing. I want one of them.
Yeah, but and given the age that you were at to do that and what obviously biking entails, any pushback from any family members saying, Danny, I don't think this is something that we want you on? Or?
Everyone. I mean, I had two mates that rode motorbikes, you know, and I was one of those guys that went mad, you know, not me. Mm. And especially when I remember my mate took me on the back. He had a little bit of sort of chopper. It was like a Yamaha, say.
Yeah.
And he took me down the back, down Ladbroke Grove. And that's when I really, this guy really knows how to ride, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and so, but I still didn't think at that point I wanted to get a bike. It was, as I said, I was in my 30s now and sitting outside the theatre having lunch with the cast and that. And this cool guy just turned up and just stopped the show.
And maybe good in a way, Daddy, that it was when you come to it a little bit later. I mean, Ewan was farting around on things before he should have really been doing it. But
right.
But that sense of being a little bit older, being a little bit more
late to the game, yeah.
That you approach it in a slightly different headspace than me. And this is me. I'm not stereotyping a 16, 17-year-old biker because we love the family. We want everyone out there as much as possible on two wheels. But as an older person with a career that you've got to keep an eye on as well, very, very much so, maybe you are a bit more
cool. Well, everybody at that point said, hold on, mate, you're on telly, you're doing this, you're doing that, you're on the fit, but what are you doing, like? And, you know, to be honest with you, the first time I ever rode a bike was, you know, round our way was the canal, wasn't it? I grew up with the canal on one side and the railway lines on the other. So it was always, you know, there was a line of Victorian houses that had been demolished, which now is Meanwhile Gardens, you know, famous sort of little park that some hippies put together out of an old bomb site. And then, you know, and then after a while, the council goes, well, that's really nice of you guys. We'll have that now. And now you've got, certain people are recording albums there now during Notting Hill Carnival. Aswad recorded a live album there during Notting Hill Carnival.
Really?
And that's the estate where I grew up on. It was the first skateboard park in the UK, Meanwhile Gardens.
Danny, what fascinates me though, Danny, I've got to ask, right? So when I was an athlete, I had an R1, right? And we'll talk about your pink R1 in a minute. And I kept that secret from my coach and my parents. If I got hurt, yeah, it's bad news, I'll be injured. But your livelihood is not being hurt. The show must go on. Mm-hmm. You're riding a bike to the West End. Surely the producers or Red Dwarf are saying to you, no, mate, first of all, how do you get insurance? But secondly, do not get hurt. And that's a big risk.
Well, I mean, everybody in there, you imagine how many jobs I've ridden my bike to. I even rode my bike when I was on Strictly, if you remember. they showed me riding into rehearsals on the R1. You know, so it was still that thing of, oh, hold on, why didn't they just say, what's he doing on a bike? You know, by then, I think they're used to it now, because you've got all the girl that was in Holby, she rides bike. There's loads of Hollywood rides, but everyone rides bikes now. Yeah. So, you know, you've got Guy Martin, you've got Ross Noble, they've all got bike shows, and it's Henry Coles and, you know, all of these guys now, it's accepted that Loveys ride motorbikes.
Loveys.
Charlie Borman, you know, he's the king of the Loveys, Charlie. His dad's the king of the Loveys, you know, but they ride motorbikes, Ewan McGregor. These guys, you know, if something happens to Ewan, imagine on a movie.
Yeah.
Mate, that's a whole shutdown, a whole Hollywood movie time, isn't it? Mm, yeah. So, yeah, nowadays, I think you'll agree, probably
quite Ewan. Acceptable, isn't it?
Yeah. But in them days, you know, I had the first run of the R1, remember? Oh, my days. Yeah. You couldn't keep the front down. It's the first time the first time I ever did a wheelie, I didn't mean it. That was on that thing.
just pulling away from the line.
I did a wheelie on that thing and didn't even want to, right? And I was like, ooh, that's what it's like with the front wheel up in the air. Mate, that thing was an animal. That thing was an animal.
And obviously, the fact that you mentioned R1s as well, and it's something that you alluded to just a few moments ago, Danny. So talk us through pink R1s with pink leathers for a trip to Valencia Easy Riders with Steve Keys.
Right, you're going to... Yeah. See, when I explain it to you, you're both going to go, that makes sense, right? Mm. I know it sounds crackers at the time. So I have to go back to, obviously, when I first passed my test, the first bike I actually had was the ZXR 750 with the old hose pipes in the tank. Yeah, you know. And, you know, I had the whole matching Dionysus, all of that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, the green bike, blah, 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 all of that. Mm. And then this word called R1 happened, yeah? So now I'm, you know, I've had the bike license while I've had the big bike and I've, you know, I've put that up the road already, you know, and all of that. So, now it's this R1 thing. So, of course, me being this sort of fashionista thing, right, I just refused to ride it out blue or red. So there was two options, blue or red, wasn't it? I just said, I can't do it, mate. There's going to be another 100 bikes like mine. So I said, if you spray that black, I'll buy it. And he did. So I came out with a black one. First ever run, I came out with a black one. People used to come up next to me and look at it and they'd be sitting on an R1 and they'd be looking at my bike wondering what it is. Because then what I did, I covered the headlights. Remember the old tinted headlight? And I had a tinted screen. This thing was completely black. What I did with the wheels, because I said, well, everyone's got black wheels, isn't they? I mean, I've got to have something a bit different. So they polished the inner rims, they polished them stainless. So when it was rolling down the road, it looked like there was no wheel. So I polished the silver bits around the edge of the rim. So everybody knew my bike, you know. So the funny thing was, what I heard around the streets, because you've got to remember, at that point, biking was huge among the man them, right? Back in the, right? No, listen, this is not even funny, right? So you got to remember, these are two totally different attitudes towards motorcycling.
Yeah.
Right? Ones, they had gold chains, flapping, shorts, trainers, right? And you sort of think, yeah, that, you know, but it's more of a fashion thing, you know, and you had to have an R1. And that was what was going on. So anyway, mine was different, didn't it? So then what would happen? You'd go to sort of Luton Carnival, and there'd be like 50 R1s. There'd be red and green ones, and people trying to find their R1s. Like, bloop, 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 bloop. Because all the man then would have all these R1s, and no one knew, which one's mine? Do, do, do. I knew where mine was.
The only black one.
Right,
there.
So I knew where mine was. So anyway, but that was that, you know. But then, again, until you've gone up the road, you'll get a pair of leathers. you know, and so, you know, then I started to really take it seriously. And, you know, and if you look at some, you know, that's when I started buying, you know, proper levers and doing it properly because, you know, it was a lot more serious. People were dying on them things, man, you know, because they really didn't know how to ride. And so, you know, I was always happy that I did mine the right way and got my license.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I was never going to go out there without a license. And then, you know, it's a bit difficult for people to take you seriously if you turn up on an R1, you know, with shorts and trainers.
Yeah, it looks.
And then you sort of become a joke in that. You know, that's all very funny, but, you know, a lot of people have known a lot of people that have, you know, come cropper with this stuff. It's not a joke. And then when you get into it and you realize how serious it's taken, you then have to say, well, you know, I can't then, you know, go against that. And that's when, you know, you start to meet people like Steve and, you know, yourselves. And then you see that they're not there because they actually really do like biking, you know. Whereas at first I thought it was a bit, you know, as I said to you, it looked cool. And then that moment comes when you go, oh, mate, this is serious stuff, you know. And then you sort of, you don't want to be the guy that brings it down, if you know what I mean, you know, keep it serious. There's a lot of laughs to have there, obviously, and there's no more people that would laugh than people that have been victims of certain bike incidents, yeah. And they're just as funny as the guys that haven't. You know, I've met guys that you think would be really down, and but they're up about it. They still love the sport, even though it's been harsh to them. You see more wheelchairs at motorcycling than any other theatre or anything like that. I can tell you that. Yeah, you'd see more wheelchairs at a motorcycle event than you would at a theatre. And so that's when you realise that you cannot take the mickey and start, you know, being unsafe and promoting sort of unsafe riding and not having the right equipment and this and that. And that's when I really, you know, that's when I started doing the rides, you know, like with Matt and going on the rides and doing it properly. You know, I wanted to do stuff that bikers did.
The point that you're making there, Dan, is one that perhaps we, well, certainly I've not thought of you and chip in, obviously, if you disagree, but that sense of, because we speak to, it's funny because you rattled off a lot of people that we've spoken to on here. We've had the privilege of speaking to, like we're chatting to you now, Danny, that the sense of community, but the responsibility to the community. And that's not because you're famous or there's a camera looking at you while you're doing it. That's you choosing to be part of that family and being a leader in that family of going, right, lads, I understand your approach, but come on, these are dangerous things.
Well, I mean, and, you know, I remember when I went to the Isle of Man, I remember I wanted to, you know, I was going to do the parade lap, you know, so, and I thought, oh God, I didn't want to be the lovey that turned up, met everyone there, got on the bike in the garage and went around, you know, so I actually did borrow my mate's van, the builder mate, and strapped Mike in the back and rode that van over to the Isle of Man, got to the paddock, rolled it out down with the rest of the guys. Funny story coming up. So I'm in the paddock getting ready to do the parade lap, and there was another couple of people in there, and there was a guy next to me, Northern lad, and he had all that, you know, the relentless days of Suzuki, you know, big lad, and I had an old, you know, scaffolding board as my to bring the bike. Got the bike to the top, it was like that. Wong, wong, wong. And he looked, he went, hey, you better borrow our one, mate. Right? And then he brought his one over, he put it on, right? Don't forget, I'm still in my civvies. Anyway, you can imagine his face. He's looking like this huge mountain of a unit, right? Getting ready to absolutely slaughter that circuit. And I'm now pushing down a pink R1, and he stops and he looks at me like that, as if to say, what the? And he went, whatever you do, mate, don't pass me on that. That was honest truth. And then, of course, you can imagine afterwards, I came out with the levers. He went, oh, yeah. You know, and then the helmet, you know, he's like, what the? I mean, but that was the real stuff, you know. And yeah. another thing, so I ended up in the tent with a load of Irish guys, right, who knew I was doing the parade lap, didn't they? So, and they goes, listen, when you get round there, will you stop where we're watching at the do-do-do? And I looked at them and I went, if you have a sign saying go, cat, go, I'll stop.
Yeah,
I got to that corner, mate. There was a bed sheet that had been spray painted. Go, cat, go. There's a picture of me like that with them. Nice. You know, so that was the kind of thing that, you know, that's the real Isle of Man. And mm-hmm. then, of course, you can imagine, John McGuinness is going for the 130.
Mm.
Yeah, that was the milestone everybody wanted to break.
Yeah.
When he broke that, I was in his pits.
No way.
If you look at Parc Fermé, I'm standing next to his wife. With the 130.
You're still in pink, are you? You're still in the pink levers.
Oh, no, I've got off the pink levers now. No, you can't go in the pits unless you've got overalls. So I'm there with the overalls on.
Really? There. Part of his pit crew. It's you, Danny, that got him over 130, right. Mate. It's you.
When he broke the 130 and came in for his pit stop, I was standing there like that.
That's amazing.
In fact, there's a photo of John sitting at the start just before he does the 130, sitting on his bike like that. There's a picture. You go and look at it online and then go and look on the wall behind him, and I'm standing in the same pose with the overalls on.
So tell us what the feeling was like in the pit then, once he'd done it. That must have been absolutely electric.
Mate, I was already gone just watching the racing. Like, you know that one?
Hmm.
I was standing at the finish line. It was weird, right? The first time you ever stand there. And all I could hear was, so I'm looking, I can't see anything, right? I'm looking, what's that? And I'm like, wow! I went, oh my God. You just hear this rumble and then you literally have to go. You, before it gets to you, you better start looking that way. That's how fast they go past you. You just hear this rumble of engines and then it's wee-woo, wee-woo. I'm like, my goodness. So the day that Guy Martin crashed at 150 and set the woman's whole front house on fire and the bike was absolutely, mate, I was, you know, you can hear the race. I was in the paddock at the time. Mm. And so I went to have a wee and I've got their headphone on and it was like, somebody's crashed. This guy, Mark, but I'd been talking to the guy before he took off in the paddock. And then I was listening on the toilet, but I didn't find out till afterwards. But apparently the story goes that on the Monday, he was trying to get out of bed to go back to work on the lorries. His dad had to literally force him down, say, where are you going?
No way.
He was trying to get up to go to work.
Different breed.
Do you know, he was the first person I ever spoke to in the Isle of Man when I got there. Me and my missus arrived in the Isle of Man and we ended up, because we were being hosted by this guy who had the memorabilia shop on the island. So if you imagine that we get to the hotel where we're staying and my missus loved the film Wolverine, of course, right? So we get to the hotel in the Isle of Man and we're waiting for the host. We're having a cup of tea. We look over in the corner and I say to her, I goes to her, look in the corner. I said, it's Wolverine. I didn't know who this guy was from Adam.
He has got the look of him, though.
No, I'm saying, you know, she's mad about that film. Even today, the Avengers, they're mad about that. So anyway, I goes, look, Wolverine. So we're looking, I said, that is him. And he's the best lookalike I've ever seen. So anyway. And so now, the host comes in now and introduces us. Oh, have you met Guy? No, who's Guy? Like that kind of thing. And then I start to find out who this guy Martin is over the time on the island. And so that was my introduction to Guy. And so I was so glad that I met them like that and not because they were the famous bikers, you know. So I did meet Foggy at the Isle of Man. I did meet Guy. You know, I met Carl Cox at the races. I met most of these guys. All of those guys, the celebrities, Keith Flint. I never met them in show business. I met them at biking.
Mm. That love of biking, that mutual respect and love of two wheels.
Even though we were all in pretty much in chat, I never met Ross Noble. we're all in show business. I never met Keith Flint. I never met Carl Cox. I never met any of these guys in show business, but I met them all at biking.
Yeah.
So it is a special community like that.
Yeah, it's that kind of fraternal bond that we've all got. I've got a quick bit of mid-show housekeeping for us here on the podcast. If you haven't already, please press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. So going on what you said there, Danny, about that not necessarily a secret society, but the club that we're all in, that little nod of bikers together. What is the current bike ownership situation, right now, mate? What have you got?
There's a twist and go Chinese thing.
Yeah.
And then there's a Yamaha YBR 125, which is the one we rode on what we called the 125 challenge, which was 125, because everyone said, oh, we did Valencia on our ones, they were easy, right? So we said we'd do it on 125s, do exactly the same ride next year, but we went on 125s anyway. So and then there's the Yamaha XT, which we did a ride called the Five Peaks Challenge, which was five countries, 5 days, and climb a mountain in each one. So those three are out there right now. The two R ones are in down at Steve's place in Worthing.
Yeah.
And the Triumph. Mm-hmm. Is it the Triumph Experience?
Is it there? Is it on display?
It's been there ages ago.
Oh, fantastic!
So basically, you know, you've got Steve McQueen. You had Steve McQueen's Bonnie up there.
Yeah.
And then you had the other one, which is the Death in Paradise Bonnie, it was up there. So, you know, because, you know, that bike is called Bonnie and Side.
Nice. Like it.
You know that, man. I told you, Bonnie and Side, that's the name of the bike.
That's brilliant. It's probably an impossible question, though, like, Danny, my next one. But can you pick a favourite bike that you've owned? I know they're all going to be for different reasons, but can you pick, is it the Pink R1?
Do you know what? I'm always going to have that first R1, mate. And in that one, it's something about it that was dangerous and at the same time so pleasurable, if you know what I mean. It's pleasure and pain, sunshine and rain. It was all those contradictions that men like, you know, the bit of danger and a bit of love, a bit of flashy. It was a bit of everything, wasn't it, that first one?
Yeah, wicked. Great.
But now you look at it, if you think of an R1 today, no one would get on that thing, would they?
Yeah.
No.
You know, it's got so much assistance now.
Yeah.
That was just raw, unabated.
Challenge, wasn't it?
Challenge, yeah. Mm. And that's the word. It was the challenge, I think, that we liked.
You cut your teeth riding that bike. That's where you learn to walk the boards on that, I tell you. Yeah,
you've had a couple of times the old sphincter was, mate. And on that thing, there's no kind of on that. It's either there's
on
no
or off.
Leading up. You know, sometimes you're on the bike and you go There's none of that. It's on an R1. It's that's that quick. You got to be that ready to be, you know, scared.
Not to 0 in seconds, basically.
There ain't no bike can go from that note to 60. Man beats everything.
Given, I mean, it's been so fascinating to chat, Danny. I mean, let's just to round, not necessarily round it off, because we've got a couple more questions for you, but just to knit it back into what you call the lovey stuff, the show business stuff. What's the rest of the year looking like? What's on the slate? What are you in the middle of?
Well, if you think from Strictly, I did my one-man show. My one-man show's about Sammy Davis Jr. I toured that. And then I did the world premiere of the Da Vinci Code stage version. So, and then after I did that with Nigel Harmony, played the Tom Hanks part, and I played the professor. I'm only the second person in the world to play that part.
The first was
Sir Ian McKellen.
My word.
Yeah, I'm the second person to play that part. It's madness. You think I told you about the guy that, you know, and you go there and you said, this is nuts. He's a Lord of the Theatre.
Yeah.
What? He's a Lord of the Theatre and he did the movie. And I'm the guy from Ladbroke Grove, and I did the stage version. That's nuts. That's crazy, or what? So anyway, you know, if I actually stopped and thought about it, I'd be I'd be an unbearable megalomaniac.
Danny, this has been amazing, mate. And unfortunately, that's about it for this week's Full
it's
Chat.
It's been fascinating. It's been great.
I mean, your approach to everything is inspiring.
Well, we don't get to talk too much because we're too busy enjoying the racing or whatever.
Correct.
Yeah. We don't.
Correct.
The last thing you want is a load of old lovies in the hospitality talking about show business.
which is literally what Ewan is. Just a reminder, everyone, Bike Show is the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker. They'll tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your annual bike, scooter, or moped insurance, and so much more.
Today has been an absolute delight. Thank you so much to our special guest. He is simply a one-off. He has been absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much to Mr. Danny John Jules.
It's been a pleasure, guys. And as I said, you know, Ewan, it's more like nice to see you again.
Lovely. Likewise.
It's always lovely to see you, Ewan Thomas. Yeah. Don't forget to press the subscribe button on YouTube so that you never miss an episode. Or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from.
I've absolutely loved this episode. I hope you all have as well. Until next time, goodbye.